on your calendars. Talked about the men's retreat. And Jerry Griffin joins lead team. I want to welcome Jerry. Stand up, Jerry, so everyone knows who you are. Most of you know him, but amazing, manly God, we're excited to have him at the helm on lead team. So I just want to welcome him. Children's movie night, September 9th. I think there's some information on here. You know, try to put yourself inside the head of an 8-year-old child and think about how exciting it would be to come here to the church with a bunch of families, you know, your fellow friends, and watch a movie on the big screen. So my kids don't go to the movie theater very often, so they'd be pretty excited about that. So put that on your calendar if you have grade school kids. And also want to just say welcome to anybody who's visiting this morning. And if you managed to get by Gary in the back without him getting you a welcome packet, if you could just raise your hand. It's just got information about Adventure Church. We want to give you a free coffee. And if you want to just raise your hand right now, I think Gary's going to run out and give packets if there's anybody. Nobody here? Okay. Well, we're going to be talking about community this morning. And so I want to invite Randy and Jonathan up. And we're going to have a little community right up here on the stage. Which side do you want, Jonathan?
Good morning. I'm Randy. I'm one of the pastors here at Adventure, and Jonathan is also one of the pastors here at Adventure. And so we are continuing in our series on community. And this morning we're going to be a little more informal. It's going to be a little more of a discussion between us and you. And we've been talking about community for a few weeks now. God's got us on a series on that. And today, specifically, the power of community to transform. To transform. Have you experienced the power of community to transform your life? Yes. One of my daughters, who will go unnamed, who's in the room, loves community. I mean, she lives for community. She can't. If there's part of her community, the youth group, that is meeting, and she can't be there for some reason, it doesn't matter why they're meeting, and she cannot be there to join them, it is like she feels deep pain in her soul. She loves community. In fact, she is more alive in a group setting than she is in any other context. And in that way, she is like God. In that way, she is like God. Jesus said, for where two or three come together in my name, there I am. Two or three folks are meeting, that's where I want to be. Right? That's kind of what's going on with that verse. Jesus dwells in community. Somehow God dwells, God shows up in the context of community in a different way. He loves it, especially community that puts him in the center. And not only does he dwell in community, but he is a community. The Trinity is a group. And so when you walk in community, you are living like he lives. You're acting like God when you gather together around Jesus, putting him in the center, you're more accurately bearing his image. Because we are image bearers of God, right? A couple of weeks ago, we looked at John 17, and we talked about Jesus and his prayer. When you want to know what somebody really wants, when you want to know what somebody really, really cares about, you listen to what they pray. Right? Because people tell you what they care about all day long, but if you could record their prayers, their secret prayers, then you get the real stuff. And what did Jesus pray for in John 17? All through the chapter, he prayed for us to live in community and be one. And listen to what he says here. He says, may they be brought together. Sorry, may they be brought to complete unity to let the world know that you sent me. So what that means is that when we're loving each other, when we are serving each other, when you live loving each other and serving each other, and when you live washing each other's feet, and like we talked about last week, fathering one another, you validate Jesus to the world that he's from God. How big a deal is it to God that we experience and live in unity and community? It's just an incidental. It's an extra, right? I mean, don't we think of it that way? Don't you think of having a really good, tight community that you walk and live in? Don't you think of that as sort of an extra in the Christian life? Do you think most Christians do? Yeah, they do. But it's an essential. It's not an incidental at all. It's an essential. Jeff Hansen was telling us at Lead Team Tuesday night that he was praying and God brought up community to you. So I've asked Jeff to share. Would you share from your journal how that worked? He was listening to the Lord on this and actually on something else, and God brought it up. Oh. It won't open, buddy. It's the other side. There you go.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't expect Randy to have me share this when I shared it with Lead Team, but I'll try to read it.
Dude, you got
to
tell him that.
And Lead Team, knowing that I'm not going to be forced to share everything up here. But community, you know.
It's all about community.
So, the other day, I just was one of those days where there's a lot of to-dos, you know, 8 or 10 things that are going to take a lot of focus to try and get done in the day. And I'm still maturing as a man, as a Christian, and learning how to face those kind of days. But I get it together and I realize this is one of those days I need to start by saying, God, I wrote down my question. What do you want to say about this day, Lord? And then sometimes when I do that, I feel like I just know what God wants to say. And I just write it down and I go back and read it to go, what did I just write? And this is what I wrote down. Don't lose focus. He took me totally off track of what I was expecting, which was do this first, do this, do this. And he said, don't lose focus of community. You have to face what's in front of you, but remember that community is what I live for. Hmm. And I responded, wow, what you live for, what God lives for is community? Tell me more. And then this phrase, community is... I got to read my own writing here. Community is the arrowhead to cut through the enemy's fat. Okay. There is a force that can't be reckoned with when people gather together around me. So that's God's advice and how to face my day with many things to get done.
That's awesome. We just thought that was huge. And God confirms it all through his word. He confirms it when we pray and we listen. Community is a big deal. And so many good things come from being a part of a group, part of a community. My question today is, with all these good things about living in community, why do Christians sometimes avoid community? Why do Christians choose to live more isolated lives or keep things on the surface? You know, sort of live maybe even if they're in a group, they live more isolated and more, you know, protected in that group. They don't engage, they just don't join or join a group at all, get involved at all. Why do you think that is? And look, I just want to get your feedback. Why do you think some Christians, because clearly we see it in the church quite a bit, some Christians don't get involved. They don't enter in. Why? Fear of rejection. They aren't excited about the accountability aspect of it. Somebody back here. So they feel like they're getting it elsewhere. Okay. They have wounds that the enemy's playing on. What? They have been rejected. Yeah. Yes. Anybody here experienced rejection in a group before? Yeah, yeah, it's lame, right? Or let me put it also, have anybody here experienced a perception of rejection? They thought they were being rejected. I've had a lot more of that than actual rejection, where I walked away and folded, you know, and it was, you rejected me, but they really hadn't. Any other ideas? Yeah. We are. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we are so independent as Americans, and also we kind of get happy with our freedom to, you know, do whatever we feel like doing, and being a part of a group, there's some obligation. Yeah. Yeah, let's just stop there for a minute. And, you know, community exposes you. Real community exposes you. You can fake it for a while. You can fake it in a community group that meets once in a while. But if you enter into real community, say like a mission trip where you're with each other for a week, day in and day out. So, you know, there's some of our community groups that are launching. There's a Philippines group that's going to launch. Those guys are probably going to end up spending a week or 2 weeks together, smelling each other, seeing it all. We don't like that exposure for real, that real community brings. Because community can be like a spotlight on my need for more godliness. The areas that I need to grow, the areas that I need cleaning up, like a sliver in my finger, you know, I can't see it unless I put a big light, you know, put it under a big light, I can't see it to dig it out. If I get into real community, I can only fake it so long. Pretty soon, my impatience, my self-righteousness, my selfishness, my need to be right, my personality quirks, my lack of love for certain kind of people, my neediness, my fear of rejection, all that stuff can start to get exposed. And I think that at the root of why we don't enter into real, true, deep community, where we're open and honest, is because it's going to expose those slivers that need to be cleaned out. And that doesn't feel good. I almost did the clip for you this morning, but in Mission Impossible 1, Ethan Hunt, you know, is the star, Tom Cruise, and the main guy, and he meets, you know, over the internet, this super spy person called Max, and then he arranges a meeting with this person, and it turns out to be this woman, and they're driving in a car, and Ethan Hunt looks over at her. If you remember the scene, some of you have seen that movie, he looks over at her and says, "Is it Max or Maxine?" And she says, "I don't need to tell you how valuable anonymity is in my profession." And then she says, "Anonymity is like a warm blanket." And it is, isn't it? Anonymity is like a warm blanket. It doesn't make me more Christ-like. It's comforting, but it doesn't make me more Christ-like. Spotlight on my issues is critical to my growth. And alone on a desert island, I don't care if my breath stinks. Alone on a desert island, I don't care if my beard grows or if my hair looks good, you know. But real community, I've got to pay attention to some more things. It brings how you relate gets exposed in community. If you're stuffy, it's going to come out. If you're boring, it's going to come out. If you are going to control the situation and take over, that kind of stuff comes out, doesn't it? See what I mean? The slivers are showing up. Spotlight's on. So it has the Living in Real Community brings transformation. It has the power to transform. So I've asked these guys, how have you experienced community's power to transform?
Okay. One story that comes to mind is about 7 years ago, I was out in the woods back here behind Duval building a house with my dad, and we just bought this property, and we were out in Bothell, and we were moving out this way, and there was a young boy in me that had this desire to do something start to finish and say, I did it. I wanted that. And there's no way it was going to be building a house from start to finish, because I didn't know enough about it. My dad did. But I wanted something in that project that I was going to do. So we were going to do this stone fireplace, you know, with the kind of artificial stones that you stick on the wall. And I'm like, I want to do that. I want to do every stone on that wall to say I placed all those stones. So my dad set up, you know, got all the prep work done and got that set up. And then came the morning, we were going to start on that, and he grabs the stone. He's like, okay, now let me just get you started. Let me show you. I'm like, no! Don't put that on the wall. Because I'm very black and white, and if he does one stone on the wall, I didn't do the project, okay? Because I didn't do every piece. And it was just kind of like a check engine light clicked on there of my reaction was way out of proportion. And he's like, okay, yeah, here. And he explained it, and then I grabbed it, and I did the whole thing. And for, you know, several months, I was anybody who came by, look, I did the stone thing, and that's so cool, you know. And I was just really wrapped up in that. And then it was a year or two later that about a year after that, I came to Adventure Church. We were looking for a church in town, and we moved out here. And it was a year or two into that, coming here, that I came to a Wednesday night men's group and got into this table group every week. And one of the questions was one of those types of questions, like, are you willing to open the hood of your heart? Are you willing to look at the check engine lights? What check engine lights are going off in your life? And that came back to me. Gosh, I remember how drastically I reacted to my dad wanting to put one stone on, just show me how to do it. Why did I have to own that? You know, why did I have to do the whole thing? And talking through that for weeks with these guys. And then in the context of bringing that to my band of brothers at Lead Team and saying, you know, I don't know what's going on, but it's just like I have this need. And so this, I wanted to build a chicken coop at that point as I'm working through this. And I'm realizing, you know what, it's not about not wanting people to teach me. It's about my default has always been, if there's somebody better at something around me, I'll just let them do it. They can do a better job, and I step out of it. And then it's created this feeling like a really young boy who can't do anything like that. So I needed that experience with God of doing something, even if it's not a good job, you know? So I built this chicken coop, and one of my friends, Ezra, and my band of brothers was like, hey, dude, I'm going to build a chicken coop too. Why don't I come over, and we'll build the chicken coop together, and then you can come over and help me with mine. And I'm like, something, you know, that's like fingernails on a chalkboard, because I'm like, this is my project. I'm going to do start to finish the whole thing from digging the hole. But I was in a different place because of the community I'd walked through it with to say, you know what, Ezra, there is a season coming where I'm going to be okay with that, but I've got to do this project with God. And I was able to communicate it in a way that I understood what was going on in my heart. And there were times, you know, I don't know how many phone calls my dad got while I was building the chicken coop. Now, what do you do to make sure it's square and da-da-da? And that was, you know, I'd call him and he'd walk me through it and I'd do it. But, you know, I hadn't even, until preparing to share this today, I hadn't looked at that fireplace for a couple of years and thought, I did that. But I look at the chicken coop almost every day. I did that. Nothing's gotten into it. But it was just that was an experience of I could have went for years continuing to react and just going, why do I get so ticked when people want to help me? Now I'm way more open to say, I need to fix this or build this. Can you come over and show me how to do it and walk through it with me? Because I've stepped through that process with my heart and grown up in that area.
That's good. Good job. Thank you.
Yeah. For me, just the biggest thing for me is, as a young adult, I've experienced occasions where I kind of convinced myself that really I have nothing worthwhile to say, and becoming pastor made it even worse in the sense of, like Randy was saying, you want to keep the distance because you know that you're not perfect and you don't want people to know that, right? As a pastor, you're supposed to be a spiritual leader. You have it all put together. That's not something that the people put on me. It's something that I decided that I had to be that way to be able to lead others spiritually. But all that resulted in a lot of isolation. I said to myself, well, people don't really want to listen to me, and I don't want to expose myself. And so that was the pattern that I created in myself. And so I tend to be fairly quiet. People, you may have noticed, that's result of that past in my life. But I'm not that usually quiet. Talk to my wife, you know, she'll tell you that.
The real Jonathan.
Yeah, the real Jonathan. Once he starts talking, you can't shut him up. But anyway, so that's my little bit of background. And coming to Adventure again, and then invited to join the lead team, that was very scary because this group of men were open. They're vulnerable. Took me a while to get to that. But at the same time, that sense of community, the tightness, I wanted so bad that I was willing to open myself. And one of the things that helped me the most is to realize that God is indeed good. He is absolutely good. And because you and I are recreated in Jesus Christ, and He has given us new life, and He has given us new heart, which is also good. What that means is that I can trust Randy, I can trust Jerry, I can trust Jeff, that his heart, their hearts toward me is also good. That became my starting point. And what happened was, so this past spring, some of you know that Kim and I got involved with Ethiopia. And the Lord was just opening up doors to the point where back in the springtime, Kim and I were convinced that we're supposed to go to Ethiopia. And with all that excitement, I brought the idea to the lead team and said, hey guys, I want you to pray with me, pray for us, and I think we're supposed to go to Ethiopia in May. And they took time to pray, kind of stopped the whole business meeting and say, yeah, we got to go after this. And so they prayed, and after having prayed, they shared some thoughts. But one of the things that really kind of took me by surprise was Jeff said, did God really say that you're supposed to go in May? Oh. I don't know. Well, see, up to that point, I knew each step I carefully took seeking the Lord, and seemed like the Lord was opening up the door for us to take that next step and next step and next step. But seems like going to Ethiopia in May was something that I kind of said, well, that's the next logical step. I certainly don't remember God saying, thou shalt go, you know, in May. Now, pause. At that point, if I had been operating with my old self, even as a Christian, as an old self, very defensive, very suspicious, I could have walked away from that meeting thinking, well, what does Jeff think he is? That I'm not good enough? I'm not spiritual enough that I can't hear God? Huh? punk. But I was more than excited to receive those words, because I knew his heart was good toward me. That in listening, I mean, think of it, the leadership of the church responsible for all of us stopped the meeting and said, hey, let's listen to the Lord for you, for me, as one individual.
That's good.
That's the community that we have here. And so I know that he earnestly listened to the Lord, and, you know, this is the word that he heard. So I was excited. I went back home that night and talked to Kim, and Kim and I prayed. And right after we prayed, Kim goes, you know what, dumb to the gentleman that I was supposed to meet in Ethiopia, he's going to be in the States late May through the end of August. What if we invited him to come to Seattle instead of two of us going all the way to Ethiopia? And the rest was history. He came here in the beginning of August for about a week. Some of you got to meet with him. You guys are all excited about going to Ethiopia.
Half the church is going to Ethiopia.
But even more excitedly, he was totally blown away by you, by many of you. Seeing the church, seeing this community, he is the national director of Campus Crusade, who is able to work with all the 40,000 evangelical churches in Ethiopia. He has traveled globally. He works with East African nations. He's traveled in the States. That man came to this church and saw you, saw this community, and said, this is what we need in Ethiopia. That couldn't have happened if I had not trusted the power of this community.
All right, my turn. It has come to my attention that I have kind of a racehorse personality. My instant reaction to a person's new idea isn't, boy, I can see all these problems with that idea, and that I don't see really all the details associated with it. My question is, why aren't we doing it yet? Why aren't the wheels on that car yet? And what do we need to do to get those wheels on it yesterday? And so that's my personality, for better or for worse. It has some strengths to it, right? I get things done. Every team I'm involved with, you'll never accuse that team of getting little accomplished. We'll get a lot accomplished. You know, somebody shares an idea, and I can see the steps to get the idea from an idea to a working machine. It's just part of who I am. It has its weaknesses, because I can get us all sledding down a hill and not know that at the bottom of the hill is a cliff, you know, and because I didn't measure, you know, and look and do an exploratory, you know. Anyway, so we're in 2007, we're in Albania, me and Jeff and Ezra, and we are planning a Wild Heart conference in that country for the evangelical leaders of the churches throughout the country. And so we're meeting with pastor after pastor after pastor, and we're planning also to get Wild at Heart, the book, translated into Albanian, so we can give it to the men when they come to this retreat. And you need a special person to do that. I mean, somebody who has the ability to see the cultural parallels, you know, because there's a whole lot of things that are in that book that are pretty deep concepts, and we needed somebody who had a grasp of just the cultural differences between American and Albanian culture in order to translate the cultural side of it. Plus, they had to have good editing skills. Plus, they had to speak good English and good Albanian. And so every other person that we meet, I'm like, that's the guy. You know, he's the guy. Let's talk to him about it. You know what I mean? We I don't know, maybe after the third or fourth guy, you know, that I'm going, no, he's the one. You know, Jeff and Ezra, you know, take me aside. You know? And they start pushing into this issue. What is it that's driving you so hard to sort of make this happen right now? And they pressed in with that question, and it didn't feel good. I had that churning gut. You know, I wasn't like Jonathan. Their hearts are good. I'm pretty sure that they were evil and wicked from the enemy. And, I mean, as we often feel when someone suggests that we aren't quite perfect, and I could have an area to work on, and the enemy tried to come in. They don't trust your leadership. They don't respect you. They think you're stupid. And, you know, and lots of insecurities and defensiveness came to the surface, and had to grind through that, had to push through that. And through it, though, I came to realize that I drive toward accomplishment, getting things done for validation. I move quickly because it makes me feel successful when I could say, look what we got done. We got all this stuff done. And we made this happen. And so pressing into those kinds of things, that to get things accomplished can be holy in a God-given gifting, but it can also be about me finding validation through my success. It can be my own personal little plan of salvation, which it has been in the past. And it's what I reach for salvation other than Jesus. And in the context of community, these guys pushed into it with me. They pressed in there, and things have changed as a result. When I see that energy surfacing in me, I start to ask myself, now, why am I pushing here? Why am I trying to get this done, make this happen? And it's made a huge difference in growth for me as a leader, as well as just my stress level. And without these guys driving into it, without the power of community, I wouldn't have learned those things. It was hard, but it was good. Proverbs 27, Solomon tells us, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. What are the implications of that? What is it? Why iron sharpens iron? Why that phrase? We're talking about community. Why is it iron sharpening iron is his analogy? They can both be abrasive. Good. There can be a hard-heartedness that needs to be softened there. It takes some time, right? It takes a little while to start getting some of those things sharper. You need both. They're weapons. I love this man. All right. I just want to talk a little bit about a personality in Scripture that we all love, and how this looks in his life. But I want to say first, everybody has one of those life preservers. Mine is accomplishment. What's yours? What do you reach for? Everybody has some kind of life preserver in their pocket, their own little personal plan of salvation. Everybody has a resource to turn to get them some affirmation, something that they offer so that they will be wanted, so they'll fit in, something that they rely on to quiet their fear of rejection. Everybody has a life preserver they hold on to. What's yours? Everybody has a life preserver they hold on to in place of taking Jesus' hand for their personal sense of value, their sense of security and safety. We all have something else that we cling to. What's yours? For some people, it's their money, their generosity. They will buy friends. They'll keep people around because of their generosity. For some, it's their intellect. Ezra used to say, if I'm the smart guy, you'll want me. For some, it's, I'll be the nicest person you ever meet, so you'll never reject me. And still others, it's like me, performance, you know, I'll get the leaders to notice you. What's yours? Peter, his life preserver was just like mine. Be first. Get her done. Be the first to speak. Be the first to grab the gusto. Be the first to jump out of the boat. Peter was a performer. You see that when you look at Peter's life? You notice that? Peter loved to dunk the ball, and he loved the cheering crowd afterwards. And it made him feel a sense of personal value. Public opinion was his idol. And it bit him when Jesus' arrest was imminent. Because Jesus says, "You're all going to deny me." And what did Peter say? "Not me. They might, but I'm your man. I'm going to perform." Right? But when push came to shove, what people think had served him too long to give it up as a life preserver. "I don't know him. I don't know that man." People around the campfire, "Aren't you one of his?" And he starts cussing and swearing to throw suspicion off. Right? Peter could not suffer being the odd man out. He had to keep people thinking of him well. And just then the rooster crowed. Like the rest of us, sometimes his motivations were good, sometimes not. And Peter worried about, where he fit into the pecking order. And so just after Jesus reinstates him, Jesus gives him 3 "Do you love me, Peters?" for each of the 3 denials. And he says, "Feed my sheep." Reinstatement. Just after that, they're walking. John's 20 feet behind. And Peter says, "So what about him? How long is he going to last? Is he going to be around? What's the story on? What's his future? What's he asking that for?" He's wanting to know, is his future as good as mine? He's asking those questions, and Jesus gives him this curt response. "If I want him to live until I return, what is that to you?" See, Jesus pushes right back into Peter's poser. And then you fast forward the book of Acts, Peter gets filled with the Holy Spirit, and things change. There's transformation, and trust replaces fear, right? And you see Peter before the Jewish council testifying about Jesus without fear. And they say, "You will not preach in this name again?" And he says, "You tell me whether it's more important for me to obey you or God." What a change. Right? He experienced transformation. And then, like us, often we experience God. We experience transformation and the filling of the Holy Spirit, and trust replaces fear. And we enjoy freedom from our false selves, our life preservers. And Peter experienced freedom from this need to be liked and to fit in and to have people accept him. But often those old idols can find themselves wiggling back in. You ever notice that in your life? And so in Galatians 2, we read, here the situation is, Peter and Paul are in Antioch. And Peter's there kind of visiting as the head of the church, lots of success in ministry. And then some Jews arrive from Jerusalem. So Peter's here with all these Gentiles, with Paul, kind of checking out Paul's ministry. And listen to Paul's explanation in Galatians 2 of that scene. "When Peter came to Antioch, I opposed him to his face because he was clearly in the wrong. Before certain men came from James, he used to eat with the Gentiles. But when they arrived, he began to draw back and separate himself from the Gentiles because he was afraid of those who belonged to the circumcision group." You see the same thing finding its way back into Peter's life? The same issue of what people think? And the other Jews joined him in his hypocrisy, so that by their hypocrisy, even Barnabas was led astray. "When I saw that they were not acting in line with the truth of the gospel, I said to Peter in front of them all, 'You're a Jew, yet you live like a Gentile and not like a Jew. How is it then that you force Gentiles to follow Jewish customs?'" Paul takes on the leader, and he gives them both barrels publicly. I love it. Peter still had the roots of this weed, this need for people's validation, woven deep in his heart. And Paul rebukes him publicly, and I'm sure painfully and very appropriately, for the heart that won't face its need for deep weeding requires that kind of rebuke. Paul calls him a hypocrite, a royal poser in front of them all. The power of community.
Right?
Peter needed to be set free again from his idolatry and his cowardice that was beneath him. And Paul acts like a spotlight, exposing the flaw. And we don't want to be Peter in that scene, do we? Do you? So avoid community. Don't do it. Don't get involved. Community will expose you. It will expose how you're posing. It will expose how you're not developing in your becoming more like Christ. And Peter, you know, bowing to peer pressure to follow the law, you know, probably was probably unaware of his compromising heart. And Paul calls him out. I made a list of things just from our experience, what you need in order to really engage and live in community, kind of from what we've talked about. What do you need? We kind of sat around and said, what do we need to really live in community? And it's just a list here. This, by the way, several of you are going to say, can I have that list? You don't need to make notes. We put this online for you on our website, so you can download the PowerPoint today, so you can pay attention with me right now. What do you need? Number one, you need a willingness to live a humble, self-examined life. Don't you? If you're going to live in community, you need a willingness to take a hard look at self before you blame the other guy. You also need a value of holiness above how you will be viewed. Right? You have to have a value of holiness above how you're viewed to really engage in community and be known. You also have to have a posture that is committed to jettisoning your idols. Your life preserver, your personal plan of salvation. You've got to be willing once one is exposed, and rest assured your life preservers are there, though you don't know necessarily what they are. You have them, and you hold on to them. You may not know what yours is, but God will show you. And when He does, you got to be willing to say, I hate that stinky thing. I will get rid of it. Okay? And community is the great exposer. Alright? Also, a willingness to trust. Here's the biggie. Okay? The willingness to trust the hearts of others when they don't treat your immaturity with enough grace. Right? Because rest assured, they're not going to. Because nobody treats you well enough when they're rebuking you. Nobody handles your heart well enough when they're telling you you stink. It doesn't feel like it. And you can go, well, they didn't bend over backwards 3 times before they said that this is a problem in my life. And that's what we demand. We need a willingness to not invalidate their input because of its delivery. And then, when you are in a community with unfinished people, which you will be if you're in a community, it is unreasonable to expect them to never mishandle you. Remember how Proverbs tells us to receive a rebuke. A wise man what? Loves a rebuke. A wise man has a posture that when unfinished people treat his heart wrong because they didn't bend over backwards enough when they told him that he stinks, he has the wisdom to go, I'm going to blow by that and take the gold of their rebuke, weed through their how they handled me, and get to what I need to change. Does that make sense? All right, and then 5, recognize warfare is always looking to create division and agreements that will fortify division. Does that make sense? Always looking for warfare is always looking to create division and agreements that will fortify that division. You have to break those agreements or you will hide in blame and never move to the promised land of transformation. How many situations in your backstory are you hiding in blame from so you don't engage in community? They done me wrong! I'm not going to get involved in community again. You have a problem with God then. Not okay. Not image bearing. Okay? So we're going to spend a little bit of time in just meditation, prayer here. We have some music that you guys can find in the back. In your bulletin, there's a little note page. And let's just ask the Lord this question. We're just going to spend just 2 or 3 minutes right now in silence. Grab a pen, close your eyes. What have you done with truly engaging in community? What have you done with really being known? What have you done with the exposure it's created in your journey? Okay? So what have you done with this? Is another way to put it. Think about what we've talked about today. What have you done? Have you backed away? Have you engaged? Have you pushed through the difficult deliveries of things when you were exposed? Are you just hiding and you totally stay away from community as far as you can? Nobody knows you. What have you done with this? Let's just put some music on and then we're just going to take a couple minutes of silence for the Lord. And I'll just open us in prayer with it. Jesus, would you reveal it? Reveal it to your sons and daughters here. What have they done with this critical thing in our lives? This critical part of walking with you. This critical part of your heart. Reveal it, Lord. What have I done, Lord, with this, really? Get it. The music's not working, so ask God, Lord, what have I done with this? Lord, what do you want me to do about what you've pointed out? What should I do about it? Yeah, what the Lord said to me immediately when I asked that just now was, you have had dear friends that you've trusted and you've opened up to move away, and it's caused you to say, not doing that again. And so you hide in exploring others instead of sharing yourself. And then what he wants me to do with it is start sharing himself more. What's going on with me? What happened with you? Need to... yeah. Person want to share? If they heard? Yeah. We are out of time. I would love to just hear what happened for you. I just encourage you to share it with someone. I've got a couple more things I need to tell you about before we move on, or before we end our time. And so, would you stick with me for another 3 minutes? Okay. I want to give you an update on the land. The land purchase that we've been looking at on Baton Road. We've had several of you go out and pray, and the lead team has prayed, and we have been talking with a consulting firm on the feasibility of the land in order for us to build a building to handle 350 to 450 people. And we're getting very positive results. It looks like it can perk for septic and park for cars what we need. But the next step is we need to hire this consulting firm, or a consulting firm, we have one that we've met with, but to do a preliminary studies and get King County approval. Okay? So the next step is the engineers think it'll work, they need King County to say it'll work. They can think it works all day long, but if King County doesn't say it'll work, we're dead in the water. And so before we pay them $200,000 for this piece of property, it'd be great to know, wouldn't it? And so it's $5,000 to do those studies, meet with the county, and have this firm do this. And we would like to raise that money. And we would also like to raise 1 year of mortgage on the land. The land pays for itself. Next July, it's going to produce, if it just like it has, hopefully, Lord willing, for the past 6 years, about $16,000 from that fireworks stand that's on it. It has consistently produced that, which covers the mortgage. What a deal, huh? But we have to raise the first year's payments. If we get into our conference has already said, the Columbia Baptist Growth Fund has already said, we'll give you $200,000. No problem. We love you. They love us. Because we've never missed a payment in 7 years. But they said, we'll give you the full amount, no problem, but it's going to be about $800 a month payment. That's about $10,000. We want to raise it a year for that. And so, and then the other thing is, with three services beginning September 18th, eight forty-five, 10:15 and 11:45 services. Okay, so we're just backing up this service 15 minutes. Rest of you, you'll be okay. With those services, there's going to be a little less transition time for us to between services. we want to build an awning system out there so we have a place for people out of the rain to hang out and talk. We put some heaters out there, and so it's nice on Sunday morning. But the awning system and also the deck out there is breaking through with the espresso cart. We need to re-deck it. We need another $5,000 for those things, the awnings and the decking. So what we want to do is we want to do a kind of a little fundraising campaign between now and October 16th, which is our 7th year anniversary. And we want to try to raise $20,000 to buy the land and fix the deck in the front and get this feasibility done. And so what we want to ask you to do is, would you pray about a gift above and beyond your normal giving to help us raise that money? We're a community. We're a family. We think we can do it. When we wanted to do the roof, we raised $15,000 in a month. When we wanted to do the roof over there and do the kitchen, we raised another $15,000 in a month. I think we can do 20 for this. So that's our challenge. That's our goal. And so would you begin to pray about that part of this whole equation? And then one other announcement, and that is a video that we're going to show you, and then I'm going to land it and pray over our offering and let you go.